sexual harassment, and that she is strongly considering filing a report with the EEOC as a preliminary to filing her own lawsuit.
That's not true! Ken erupted, the first words Maria had heard him speak all day.
Jill turned toward him, her tone as even as before.
You told her she should try harder to be a team player, that having you in her corner could help her when she came up for partner, and then you groped her.
I did no such thing.
You touched her inappropriately on her neck and chest.
I only touched her shoulder.
So, you admit to touching her, and keeping your hands on her even though she clearly found it offensive.
With her words, Ken realized it was probably better to shut his mouth, and he turned toward Barney. If Barney was angered by what Jill had said, he didn't show it.
Maria made no claim of sexual harassment in our meeting today, nor, in fact, has she ever said anything to me in all the months she's been working here.
Why would she? She knew you'd cover for him, just like before when the other sexual harassment cases were settled.
Barney drew a long breath.
I'm sure there's been some sort of misunderstanding, and we'll be able to work this out amicably. There's no reason to resort to threats.
I haven't resorted to threats. In fact, if anything, you should be thankful that we're here so you aren't surprised.
I am, he agreed. I do think we could discuss the matter more civilly if we take our seats. I'd like to hear what Maria has to say.
I'm sure you would. We'll let you read her statement in detail as soon as it's filed. For now, I'll speak for her.
Ken's eyes went wide, but Barney simply looked at Jill.
You do understand that you can't represent Maria for obvious conflict of interest reasons.
I'm here as her friend.
I'm not sure that makes a difference.
Then let's start with this. Both Maria and I will be leaving the firm. We had no intention of informing you of that today, but considering that Maria can additionally make a case for retaliation, I thought it best to get it over with now.
For the first time, even Barney wasn't sure what to say. He looked from Jill to Maria and back to Jill.
Did you say you're both leaving the firm?
Yes.
Where will you be working?
That's not the issue we're discussing. Right now, we're talking about the lawsuit Maria intends to file. We all know that the allegations being made by Lynn and the others are serious. And can you imagine how much more heft their cases will have when Maria comes forward as well?
But I didn't do anything, Ken mumbled.
Barney merely glared at him.
Do you think anyone will believe that? After everything the others say in court? But of course, it won't get that far. Everyone in this room knows that you're going to settle. These cases are almost always settled. I'm not sure I can say the same for Maria. She was pretty upset when she spoke with me. Though I won't be her counsel on this case, my suspicion is that she may elect to take this as far as it can go.
Barney straightened his jacket.
I'm assuming that you're here not simply to inform us in advance that you're going to file or that you're leaving. I assume you're here because you'd like to resolve this matter.
Why would you think that?
There's nothing to be gained by telling us in advance that you intend to make a report with the EEOC.
Maybe I just felt a remaining bit of loyalty to the firm.
Perhaps.
Or maybe I just wanted Ken to know that in addition to ruining the firm and having his savings wiped out, he's probably going to have to sell that ridiculous car of his by the time Maria is through with him.
Ken moaned ever so slightly. Barney ignored it.
How can we resolve this?
For starters, Maria wants 6 weeks of vacation this year.
Why would she want 6 weeks vacation when she's planning on leaving?
Because it's on her bucket list. Because Ken is an ass. Because yesterday, she saw a rainbow when she was walking by a yard with the sprinklers on. Because Maria had to work evenings and weekends because of you, and so she hasn't had a day off since she's been here. My point is, it doesn't matter why she wants it. She does, and that's that.
First-year employees are only entitled to a week.
Then make an exception. Paid vacation, mind you, which will be added to her final check.
Ken was about to say something, but Barney held up his hand to stop him. Anything else?
Yes. As far as a 2-week notice goes, that's out. Today is Maria's last day, and she won't be coming back. She gets paid for these 2 weeks as well.
Barney looked like he had eaten something unpleasant. Is that all? 2 months' salary?
Not quite. For her mental suffering, she needs a bonus. Let's make it 3 additional months' salary on top of those 2 months.
Barney was quiet. And in exchange for that?
I'll have to talk it over with her. But I'm fairly certain you'll never hear anything from her about any of Ken's deviant behavior. No reports, no lawsuits. Just over and done, and we'll go our own separate ways.
Barney was quiet, probably debating how serious Maria might be about all of this. Jill, however, knew exactly what he was thinking.
She's not bluffing, Barney. You know how Ken is. You know what he's done to others, and you also know that he sexually harassed Maria. More than that, you know we're not talking about a lot of money here. Essentially, she's offering you a gift because as much as she despises Ken, she has great respect for you.
And the affidavit?
Don't even go there, Jill warned. Maria is not going to lie. However, she won't sign an affidavit as to what actually happened. It'll just be forgotten.
And if she's deposed by the other litigants?
She'll be on the planet Jupiter by then, so there's no reason to worry.
Excuse me.
Oh, she smiled. Sorry, I thought we'd detoured into fantasy land.
Fantasy?
You and I both know she won't get deposed because you're not going to let it get that far. You'll end up settling. You have to, or it's going to cost you a fortune, even if you win.
Barney glanced at Ken, then back to Jill. May I ask what your demands are, since you'll be leaving the firm as well?
Only one, and it's not about money, Jill answered. In exchange, I'll finish out the next couple of weeks here just as I plan to do, work with the partners to make sure any of my clients barely notice the transition, and after that, I'll move on.
What's the one demand?
I'd like you to throw me a small going-away party here at the office. Nothing fancy, just a cake at lunch or whatever. But I'd like the chance to say goodbye to everyone in one fell swoop. Obviously, until then, I think we all know it would be best to keep our departure as quiet as possible. The other partners have to know, but I don't want to start a stampede of employees racing for the exits. Believe it or not, I hope you get this settled and are able to put it behind you as quickly and quietly as possible. There are a lot of good people here.
While Barney may have appreciated Jill's sentiment, Maria saw him twitch as he brought a hand to his chin. 5 months paid for Maria is a bit high. I'm sure the partners will balk at that. Now, 3 months I could probably swing.
Don't misinterpret my high hopes for others here as a chance to negotiate, because we aren't negotiating. This is a one-time, take-it-or-leave-it offer, which ends the moment that Maria and I walk out the door and she starts on the EEOC paperwork. Frankly, she's asking for far less than what you're going to have to shell out to the others. So right now, you should be thanking her, not trying to lowball.
Barney took his time before answering. I'd still have to talk to the other partners, he finally said. I can't make this kind of decision on my own.
Sure you can. We both know the partners will follow your lead, so let's stop playing games, all right? Are you in or out? 5 months' salary? Maria exclaimed.
They were standing in the parking lot near Maria's car. A few minutes later, Maria had stashed the few personal items she'd had in the office, primarily photographs of her family and a few she'd taken while paddleboarding, into a small box and had carried it outside, placing it in the trunk. At Barney's request, she hadn't said goodbye to anyone, nor had anyone seemed to notice anything out of the ordinary regarding her departure. Jill had been waiting for her. Jill smiled.
Pretty good, huh?
Truthfully, she was reeling. No more Ken, no more weekends trying to keep up with Barney's demands, and 5 months' salary straight into her savings account? She'd never, ever had anything close to that. What had just happened was akin to buying a winning scratch-off lottery ticket. I'm still in shock. I probably could have gotten you more. That's more than enough. I feel guilty for getting that much. Don't feel bad, because believe it or not, you were sexually harassed. It may not have been as obvious to you as it was to others, but you were. You deserve this. And believe me when I say that Barney is breathing a massive sigh of relief right now, or we wouldn't be standing here doing a mini celebration. Thank you so much. You don't have to thank me. If our positions were reversed, you would have done it for me. I'm nowhere near as good as you are. You took on Barney, and you won. Jill offered a sheepish grin. And you want to know the crazy thing? What's that? Leslie is way, way better than me. The thought made Maria's head spin. Thank you again for taking a chance on me. You're welcome, but I know exactly what I'm getting. Maria motioned toward the building. It's strange to think I'm not going to work tomorrow. And most likely I will never walk through those doors again. It happens so fast. Like what they say about bankruptcy? It happens slow at first and then all at once? Maria nodded. I guess. As much as I dislike what Barney was trying to do just now, I still hope he'll be okay. Barney's the one attorney you never have to worry about. He'll be fine, no matter what. And between you and me, it wouldn't surprise me if he leaves the firm too. Why would he leave? Because he can. And would you want to keep working with Ken? Maria didn't answer, but then again, she didn't have to. Jill was right. And while Maria was still trying to process her day, she suddenly found herself thinking about Lester Manning and the things Margolis had told her. She crossed her arms. What would you do if you were me? About Lester, I mean, Maria asked. I don't think you know enough yet to reach any conclusions. I know that probably doesn't help you, but... She trailed off, and Maria couldn't blame her, since even to her, the pieces simply didn't fit. Maria drove through heavy traffic to Mayfair, an upscale shopping complex. As she drove, she tried to process the fact that she wouldn't be heading into work tomorrow, or even on Monday. The last time that had happened had been after she'd quit her job in Charlotte. She shook her head, forcing the thought away. She knew exactly where it would lead, and the last thing she wanted was to think about Lester or the boyfriend or anything Margolis had told her, since it would lead exactly nowhere. Unless confusion was a place. No more Ken, she marveled. No more weekends that Barney could ruin. In 2 weeks, she'd be working with Jill and 5 months' salary. On the career front, she doubted it was possible for things to get any better. And that called for a celebration of sorts. Maybe even a splurge. She could trade in her car and get something sportier, as long as it wasn't a red Corvette. But as quickly as the thought entered her mind, she knew it was just a fantasy. She was too frugal, and she had no intention of trying to explain to her dad why she'd bought a car instead of paying down some of the student debt she owed from law school, or opening an investment account, or simply saving the money, since she'd probably need to buy into the partnership in a few years. Lost in the events of today was the idea that she could actually be a partner at a law firm someday. In her early 30s, even. Whoever could have predicted that? By the time she reached Mayfair, dusk had settled in. She texted Serena that she'd get to the house a few minutes before 7, but not to hold up dinner on her account. Seconds later, her phone dinged with Serena's response. I'll just get there late too. I'd hate for you to miss any of the scintillating conversation. Maria smiled. She texted her parents and let them know when she'd arrive, then headed toward Williams-Sonoma. It was always a bit challenging to get her mom something special. Carmen always fretted about money spent on her, especially by her children. But since a new car was out of the question, Maria figured she could splurge a bit on some new pots and pans. Despite the restaurant and her own love of cooking, her mom had never considered buying new cookware. What she did have had been around since Maria was in elementary school, or maybe even longer than that.
The shopping expedition ended up being more of a splurge than she'd planned. High-quality cookware was expensive, but Maria felt good about it. Her parents had paid for private schooling, a used car at 16 that lasted until she got the one she owned now. 4 years of college and half of law school, and never once had she done something like this. She knew her mom might fret, her dad would say nothing, but she deserved it. She loaded the gifts in the trunk next to the box of personal effects. Thankfully, the traffic had mostly cleared out. Before starting the car, she texted Serena that she was 15 minutes away, and then realized she hadn't yet told Colin what had happened at the office. She still felt the need to celebrate, and with whom better than him? Later at his place, or hers. Who knew that money could be an aphrodisiac? Knowing he was probably behind the bar already, she texted him and asked that he call when he had the chance. He'd probably work until around 10 or 11, and that would give her enough time after leaving her parents to head back home, light a couple of candles, maybe even have a glass of wine. She knew it would end up being a late night, but he didn't have class in the morning, and she didn't have to go to work, so why did it matter? She set the phone on the passenger seat and headed toward her parents' house. After turning into the neighborhood, she found herself wondering how many times in her life she'd made that exact turn. Tens of thousands, probably, she thought, which amazed her, as did the neighborhood itself. While people had moved in and moved out, the houses seemed largely unaffected by the passage of time, and every corner brought with it memories. Lemonade stands or roller skating, driveway fireworks on the 4th of July, trick-or-treating, walking home with friends. Her phone began to ring, disrupting the flow of images. Glancing over, she saw Colin's name and answered with a smile. "Hey," she said, "I didn't think you were allowed to make calls while at work." "I'm not supposed to, but I saw your text. I asked the other bartender to cover for me for a few minutes. Are you okay?"
"Yeah, I'm fine," she said. "I'm almost at Mom and Dad's."
"I thought you were supposed to be there already."
"I had to buy my mom a gift first, and that took forever," she said. "But hey, you'll never guess what happened today."
"Did Margolis call again?"
"No, it's about work," she said.
And as she approached her parents' home, she told Colin what had transpired.
"Which means I'm kind of rich right now."
"Sounds like it.
I bought my mom some fabulous cookware."
"I'll bet she's going to love it."
"Once she gets over the guilt, she will. But the real reason I'm calling is that I've decided that I'd like you to come over tonight, to my place."
"Didn't we already agree that I'd come over and that I'd call when I got off?"
"Yes, but when we decided that, I wasn't in the mood to celebrate. Now I am, and I wanted to warn you in advance."
"Warn me about what?"
"Well, now that I'm sort of rich, I might make a few demands on you this evening. Physical ones, I mean."
He laughed, and she could tell he liked what she was suggesting. "Okay." Up ahead, she saw Serena's car parked in front of her parents' house. On either side of the street, the sidewalks were deserted. Up and down the block, houses were lit from the inside, lamps on and televisions flickering. Families relaxing at the end of a long day.
"Whatever you do, don't let the anticipation ruin your concentration at work. I'd hate for you to get in trouble with your boss."
"I'll do my best." She pulled in behind Serena's car and shut down the engine.
"And one more thing. Remember what I told Margolis when he asked why I was still with you?"
"Yes." She got out and rounded the car to the trunk.
"I just want you to know that I meant every word," she said.
He laughed again. "Okay." She opened the trunk.
"Unfortunately, I'm going to have to cut this call a little short. I'm going to need both hands to carry everything."
"I get it. I've got to get back to work anyway."
"Oh, before you go?"
As she eyed the boxes, she registered movement in her peripheral vision and she turned. A man was crossing the street toward her, moving fast. There was a split second when she wasn't sure how to react. This was a safe place. In this neighborhood, she'd never so much as heard of a burglary or a domestic dispute that had gotten out of hand, and she'd never been afraid. She was only yards from her parents' front door, on a street so safe she used to camp out in the backyard on warm summer nights. And yet, the stranger's purposeful gait made the hairs on the back of her neck suddenly rise, because she knew instinctively that whoever it was didn't belong here.
Darkness made clear recognition impossible, but in that instant the man's shadowed face was suddenly illuminated by the lights that spilled from her parents' living room. She saw a glint of metal in his hand, and with the sight of the gun, fear took hold. She couldn't move and could barely breathe. Only vaguely did she hear Colin say her name on the phone. Colin repeated her name a second and third time, his mounting concern enough to finally bring her back.
"He's here," she finally whispered.
"Who's there?" Colin demanded. "What's going on?"
"He has a gun," she said.
"Who has a gun?"
"Lester Manning," she said. "He's here, at the house."
Chapter 23. Colin. The shock of hearing Maria say Lester's name gave way to a surge of adrenaline, the fight-or-flight reflex kicking in. Colin vaguely heard Lester shout something and the call was disconnected. Lester. By then, Colin was already on the move, bursting from the back room and rushing past the bar. He wove around tables and guests even as he hit the redial button. The phone went straight to voicemail. Redial. Voicemail again. Maria is in trouble. Behind him, he heard the bartender call his name. Waitresses looked over in confusion, and as Colin exploded out the entrance, the manager demanded to know where he was going. "Lester has a gun." Colin raced around the corner of the building, his feet slipping on the lightly sanded sidewalk. Regaining his footing, he sprinted up the street, already calculating the most direct route to Maria's parents' place. Hoping the roads were clear, hoping his car would start, please let it start. He'd call the police from the car. He swerved around an elderly couple and rocketed into the street, his car in sight. Precious seconds ticking away. Lester could already have shoved her into his car and driven off, just like Gerald Laws did to Cassie. It was 20 minutes to her parents. He would make it in 10, or fewer. Maria might already be gone. At the car now, jumping in, jamming his keys in the ignition, careful not to flood the engine even as he turned the key hard, and the old Camaro roared to life. Colin peeled away from the curb, his eyes already on the cars ahead. Closing the gap between his car and those ahead of him, he glanced toward his phone. With one hand, he frantically dialed 911 and heard the operator ask the nature of the emergency. "A man with a gun, threatening a woman," he said. "Maria Sanchez. A guy named Lester Manning had been stalking her, and he'd surprised her at her parents'." He couldn't remember the address offhand, but told the operator Maria's parents' names, as well as the street and cross street. Identifying himself, he stated that he was on the way. When the operator urged him to let the police handle the situation without interference, he hung up. By then, he was speeding along, the nose of his car practically on the bumper of the car in front of him. With the next lane blocked by a black Range Rover coasting along at the speed limit, Colin cut across the breakdown lane and zoomed past a cluster of cars before veering back onto the road. He hit the accelerator hard and within a few seconds came up on a pickup truck and a white minivan driving side by side. He passed them in the breakdown lane too, this time barely slowing. Reaching the turnoff to the bridge, he jerked the wheel hard, tires squealing. Racing past more cars in the breakdown lane, he finally made it to a long stretch of road with less traffic and jammed the accelerator to the floor. Adrenaline sharpened his instincts behind the wheel, his body responding in perfect sync with the car. He hit 80, 90, and then 100 miles an hour and saw a red light ahead, brake lights glowing as cars slowed. Unwilling to slow down, he gunned into a bike lane. Bursting through a gap at the intersection, still he pressed on, zigzagging around cars and using the bike lane when necessary. Making a turn, he accelerated toward a long line of cars, and with nowhere to go, he cut through a gas station parking lot at close to 30 miles an hour, making people jump out of the way. The police were on their way, but it still might not be soon enough. His mind raced frantically, wondering whether Lester had already forced Maria into a car, where he might have taken her, or if he had already shot her. Another turn, this time to the left, and for the first time he was forced to come to a complete stop at a crowded intersection. He pounded the steering wheel, then held his breath as he plunged into multiple lanes of traffic. He watched as another driver slammed on his brakes, missing him by only inches. Speeding through a residential neighborhood at 60 miles per hour, he scanned for children or pets or other pedestrians, houses passing in a blur. Another turn. Tires screeched in the rear of the Camaro, fishtailed left and then right, Colin struggling for control. On this block, cars were parked on either side of the street, limiting visibility, and Colin reluctantly slowed the car. Just ahead, he could make out a couple pushing a stroller on the sidewalk, a kid playing catch with his dad on the opposite side of the street, a guy walking his dog with a long retractable leash. Another turn and a clear road with better visibility, Colin sped up again, finally recognizing the Sanchez neighborhood. It had taken him 9 minutes. He began to bank into the final turn at top speed and almost hit a blue Camry that was approaching fast in the middle of the road. Colin swerved automatically to the right, as did the other car, the Camaro fishtailing again, tires screeching. Colin felt another sudden adrenaline surge as his heart hammered. He briefly glimpsed two men in the front seat with startled expressions, their eyes wide as the cars slid past within inches of each other. Too close. Way too close. And he gripped the wheel hard, regaining control. Barely. He was almost there, the Sanchez's street up ahead, a single turn to go, and he didn't hit the brakes until he was almost there, fear taking over now, praying he wasn't too late. Sheering into the turn, he heard a siren behind him. In the rearview mirror, he saw the flashing lights on top of the squad car as it barreled around the same turn he'd just made. Colin slowed only slightly, but the squad car was closing fast and Colin heard a squawk from the loudspeaker. "Pull over!" Not a chance, Colin thought. No matter what happens to me. Chapter 24. Maria. Maria couldn't take her eyes from the gun, or the person holding it. Lester Manning. Margolis had been wrong. Lester wasn't in the hospital. He'd been waiting for her here. The knowledge paralyzed her, and she watched as he snatched the phone from her hand, his face contorted into something she barely recognized. "No calls!" he shouted, making her jump. The tone was off-key, on edge. "No police!" As he backed away, her senses heightened and she saw it all. The unkempt hair and ratty canvas jacket, faded red shirt and torn jeans, the dark holes of his pupils and the rapid rise and fall of his chest. In her head, the words ran together. Delusional disorder, acute phase, persecutory delusions. And the gun. He was holding a gun. Her mom and dad were inside, as was Serena. Her family was in danger, and it was dark, and no one in the neighborhood was out. She should have run as soon as she saw him coming, sprinted for the front door and locked him out. But she'd stood there like her legs belonged to another person. "I know what you did," he hissed. The words came out fast and almost unintelligible. As he continued to back away, she saw the phone light up and heard it ring. "Colin." Lester startled, staring at the phone in his hand. She watched Lester end the call with the press of a button, saw the phone light up and ring again. Lester frowned as he ended the second call, talking at the phone as though it were alive. "I said no calls," he called out. "No police." Then mumbling, "Think straight, it's not real." His hands were shaking as he muted the phone and shoved it into his jacket pocket. "They're not coming." Please God, let Colin have already called the police, she thought. "The police are coming and will be here soon. I'll just ride it out until they get here. I will not be like Cassie. If he so much as touches me, I'm going to scream and fight like crazy." But Margolis had said that Lester could function normally sometimes. He'd been able to work a part-time job, and when she'd met him, he was odd, but not psychotic, even when clearly struggling. Maybe she could talk to him. She just needed to stay calm. "Hi, Lester," she began, trying to keep her voice steady and pleasant. His eyes flashed up, his pupils huge. No, not huge. Dilated. "On drugs?" "Hi, Lester? That's all you can say?" "I want you to know I'm sorry about Cassie." "No, no, no," he said, raising his voice. "You don't get to say her name. She died because of you." She raised her hands instinctively, expecting him to lunge at her. But Lester instead moved yet another step farther away. As she waited for him to go on, she realized that he sounded less angry than
afraid? Or paranoid, and the last thing I want is to set him off.
She lowered her eyes, her heart hammering. She could hear Lester's labored breathing as long seconds passed. The silence stretched out until she heard him sniff and then say, "No," in a softer voice. She could hear his breathing finally begin to slow, and when he spoke again, his voice was shaky but subdued.
"They're safe," he said, nodding at the house. "Your family. I saw them through the windows. I watched your sister go inside. What happens next is up to you."
She flinched at his words but held her silence. His breath continued to slow in what seemed like a conscious effort, his gaze never wavering.
"I came to talk. You need to hear what I have to say. You'll listen to me this time, won't you, Maria?"
"Yes."
"The doctors tell me it isn't real," he explained. "I tell myself it's not real, but then I remember the truth. About Cassie and my mom, the police and what they did, and I know you're the one who started it. The doctors can tell me it's not real and that I'm making it up, but I know the truth. So tell me, you've been talking about me, haven't you?"
When she didn't answer, she watched the muscles begin to tighten in his neck.
"Don't bother lying. Remember that I already know the answer."
"Yes," she whispered.
"You've talked to the police about me again."
"Yes," she said again.
"That's why the detective came this morning."
"Where is Colin?" she wondered. "And the police?" She wasn't sure how long she could keep Lester calm.
"Yes."
He turned away, wincing.
"When we first met you, I wanted to believe you when you said you were doing your best and that Cassie would be safe. I came to understand that to you, Cassie was no one, just another name, another nobody. But she wasn't a nobody. She was my sister, and it was your job to protect her, but you didn't. And then..."
He squeezed his eyes closed.
"Cassie used to take care of me when my mom was too sick to get out of bed. She used to make me chicken noodle soup, and we'd watch television, and she'd read me books. Did you know that? She wasn't a nobody."
He wiped at his nose with the back of his hand, and when he went on, his voice was almost childlike.
"We tried to warn you what was going to happen, but you didn't listen. When Cassie died, my mom couldn't stand living anymore. Because of you, she killed herself. Did you know that? Tell the truth."
"Yes," she admitted.
"You know all about us, don't you, Maria? You know all about me."
"Yes."
"And you sent the police after me after Cassie died."
"Because you sent the notes, because you were threatening me."
"Yes." "And your boyfriend. He is your boyfriend, right? The big guy at the club. I saw how angry he got after I sent over the drink. He wanted to hurt me, didn't he?"
"Yes."
"And then, this morning, you sent the police again."
"Because you slashed my tires. Because you're stalking me."
"Yes."
He stood a bit straighter.
"That's what I told the doctors. All of this. But they don't believe me, of course. No one ever believes me.
But at least you're being honest."
"I knew. But now I really know, and I can feel the difference in my whole body. You understand, don't you, Maria?"
"No."
"Yes. It takes over. Fear, I mean. No matter how hard you try to fight it, it takes over, crushing the life out of you, like right now. I know you're afraid of me. Maybe like Cassie was afraid after you failed her."
He looked at her for confirmation, waiting.
"Yes."
She watched him tap the gun against the side of his leg.
"Can you imagine how it feels to lose your sister and your mom? And watch people like you go after my dad, and then me?"
"I can't imagine how awful that was."
"No, you can't!"
he shouted suddenly, and in that moment she heard the faint sound of a police siren in the distance. Lester snapped to attention.
Recognition dawning as the sirens grew louder, he refocused on Maria.
I said no police. I said no police!
His voice cracked, whipsawing between anger and disbelief as he took a step toward her.
I'm not going back! Do you hear me? I'm not going back!
Maria retreated, holding up her hands.
Okay? They hurt me!
He cried, taking a step in her direction. His cheeks grew mottled as he thrust his face toward her.
They shot electricity into me, and they put me in the cage with animals who beat me, and they didn't do anything. They all laughed at me, and to them it was just a game. And you don't think I know who put them up to it?
Oh, God, he's losing it.
You did!
He screamed, vibrating with rage. Maria retreated, trying to maintain the distance between them. Her gaze kept flicking to the gun, then back to Lester again. He continued to advance as she backed away, her back almost to the garage door now.
You called the police! You keep coming back, but this time I'm not going to let you get away with it!
Serena had to have heard him that time, she thought. Or my parents. They'll open the front door any second now and Lester will turn and fire. Through the static of her racing thoughts, Maria realized that the first siren had now been joined by another, more distant one, both of them drawing closer. Lester's jaw clenched, and his eyes burned with the anguish of betrayal. His finger began inching toward the gun's trigger, and a single impulse flashed through her body.
Go, go, go!
She turned and rounded the car, sprinting toward the house through the yard. She heard Lester shout her name in surprise, heard a grunt as he started after her, clipping the car.
Go! 10 yards, maybe 5.
The front door began to open and a slash of light fell across the porch. Maria was sure she could hear him behind her now.
Run!
She strained forward, surging toward the light. She could feel Lester reaching for her. In what seemed to be slow motion, she watched Serena step out onto the porch.
He's going to kill us both!
Standing in a pool of light in front of the open door, Serena didn't understand what was happening. She stared at Maria in confusion as Maria hurtled toward the porch.
Are those his fingers skimming the back of my shirt?
She willed herself to move even faster, sprinting with everything she had.
Maria!
Serena called out. Only later would Maria realize that Serena had shouted her name.
Almost there!
And then... she made it. Grabbing Serena, she pushed the two of them through the still open door, slamming it shut behind them.
What are you doing?
Serena cried, bewildered. Maria locked the door and grabbed Serena's wrist, jerking hard.
Get away from the door!
Maria screamed.
He's got a gun!
Serena stumbled as Maria pulled, almost falling.
Who has a gun?
Lester!
Dragging Serena to the kitchen, she spotted her mom standing near the stove, clearly startled by the commotion, but no dad. Maria turned from side to side.
Oh, God, where's Dad?
Wait, Lester? Lester's here?
Serena demanded from behind her.
He's outside,
Maria shouted, her gaze suddenly swinging to the sliding glass doors, hoping her dad was on the porch.
Lester Manning, the guy who was chasing me.
He'll burst through the door any second. He'll kill me and them and then kill himself, just like Gerald Laws and Cassie.
With a surge of relief, she spotted her dad at the porch table, smoky in his lap. Serena was babbling. Her mom had started asking questions as well, but Maria registered none of it.
Just be quiet, she shouted. Both of you!
She slid open the back door.
Get in here!
She hissed at her father, motioning him inside. He responded instantly, leaping to his feet with the dog tucked under his arm. Both Serena and her mom went quiet. Maria listened intently. For the door... for the sound of a window smashing. Silence. Serena stared at her, fear written on her face. Both of her parents watched her open-mouthed. Still, nothing. What if Lester was coming around from the back? In the silence, Maria registered the sounds of the sirens again, loud enough now to be heard from inside the house.
I don't understand,
Serena finally said, her voice trembling with tears.
Where was Lester chasing you?
In the yard, Maria said.
You saw him, he almost grabbed me.
But Serena only shook her head in confusion.
I saw you running, but no one was behind you,
she said.
I saw someone else running down the street. He had a gun and he was chasing me.
No,
Serena insisted,
he wasn't.
Before Maria could process her words, the sound of the sirens filled the house and the walls were flashing red and blue in steady rhythm.
The police, she thought. Thank God.
At that moment, the front door crashed open. Maria screamed.
Chapter 25. Colin. All things considered, Colin decided he was okay with what he'd done. Though as the adrenaline drained from his system, leaving him feeling both exhausted and shaky, it was hard to ignore the fact that he was on his stomach with his hands cuffed behind his back, guarded by two glowering officers and most likely staring at a long prison term. Maybe he should have pulled over for the officers who'd been following him. And maybe he shouldn't have come to a screeching halt behind the squad car that was already at the Sanchez place while those officers had been approaching the door. And maybe he shouldn't have ignored them when they demanded that he stop his charge to the front door and simply let them handle it. If he'd made different decisions, the officers probably wouldn't have drawn their weapons, nor would he have faced a situation in which he'd wondered whether they might actually fire them. On the plus side, he hadn't actually touched any of the officers after he'd kicked the door in, but none of them were in any mood to listen when he tried to tell them about the vacant house or the park, places that Lester may have run off to. All four were too pissed for that. They had him on speeding, reckless driving, and ignoring lawful directions, and they weren't going to settle for writing a couple of tickets and be done with it. They'd placed him under arrest, which meant his deal was going to be revoked. His lawyers would fight it, no question about that, but more than likely, the original judge would be informed. That judge, as evidenced by his decision in the first place, was fair and reasonable, but he'd also been crystal clear in his expectations, and the court would know about it. Add in the fact that Margolis would be arguing on the other side for permanent placement among the dangerous and violent, and the writing was on the wall. Prison. He wasn't afraid of being locked up. As a general rule, he did well in places with rules and structure, even without freedom. He knew how to keep to himself and mind his own business, and look the other way when necessary and keep his mouth shut. And after a while, the whole thing would likely become routine. He'd survive and eventually get released, and he'd start over again. But Maria wouldn't wait for him, and he wouldn't be able to become a teacher. He didn't want to think about those things. Given the same situation, he'd do it all again. Maria's stalker shows up with a gun. Had to try to save her. Simple as that. How could he have known that Lester would have been gone by the time he arrived? Had they listened to him, Colin figured that the police could have found Lester already. But precious minutes had ticked by while they put on the handcuffs and read Colin his rights. And it wasn't until the officers had calmed their nerves that they were finally able to listen first to Maria's story, which came out in fits and starts, and then to Felix, who'd said that he didn't intend to press charges for the broken door and the splintered frame. Both Serena and Carmen were crying throughout. Way too late. He'd finally watched two of the four officers leave in one of the squad cars in search of Lester. After that, surprising him, Maria asked the remaining officers to call Detective Margolis when her pleas to have Colin released were met with indifference. Colin closed his eyes, hoping that the detective would be otherwise occupied. A moment later, one of the officers announced that Margolis was on his way. Margolis was going to love this. No doubt he'd put on one of his self-satisfied smirks while he gave Colin the whole, "I warned you all along this would be coming" speech that he was surely already rehearsing as he made his way here. But again, no regrets. Maria and her family were safe, and that was all that mattered. That, and stopping Lester from showing up again. Maria had told the officers that Lester had become enraged as soon as he'd heard the sirens. Until that point, however, Maria had been able to keep him calm by talking to him. Or rather, by letting Lester voice whatever was going through his deranged brain and simply agreeing with him. But what about the next time? Would Lester be so easily placated? Or would he just grab her and take her someplace where the police wouldn't find them? The thought made him sick, and he wanted to kick himself for failing to check out the hospital himself.
How had Lester gotten out? If he'd become delusional when the detective arrived this morning, why hadn't he been restrained? Or did they even do that anymore? And there was another thing that was bothering him. How had Lester known Maria would be here? Maybe he went by the office and then her condo and saw that she wasn't around, but... His thoughts were interrupted first by headlights, then by the sound of a slowing car. He heard it pull up and come to a stop, listening as a car door opened and closed with a thud a few seconds later. Margolis.
"You ever get that feeling like Christmas has come early?" Margolis said, squatting down next to him.
Approaching Maria, he'd done a double take at the side of Colin on the ground in cuffs and practically skipped over to him instead.
"Because I think it just came early for me."
Colin said nothing. Anything he said would just get thrown back in his face.
"I mean, here I am just heading out to get a quick bite not more than 10 minutes away, and I get a call urgently requesting my presence over here. And who do I find but my old pal Colin? I must say that I haven't seen you looking this good in a long time."
Colin noted the reflection of Margolis's grin in his highly polished shoes.
"What did you do? Get in an argument with your girlfriend here? Maybe pushed Mom or Dad when they tried to intervene? Or did you go after one of the officers after they showed up and tried to calm you down?"
He spat out his toothpick, letting it fall dangerously close to Colin's face in the grass.
"You might as well drop the silent act and tell me. I'm going to find out in a minute anyway."
Colin let out a breath.
"Traffic violations," he said.
Margolis cocked his head in surprise.
"No kidding?"
When Colin didn't respond, the detective shook his head, smirking.
"I gotta admit that I never saw that one coming. But hey, I'll take it any way I can get it. So let me talk to your girlfriend over there, if you still call her your girlfriend, I mean. Even if you didn't so much as lay a finger on her, she doesn't strike me as the visit prison every weekend to support her man type. And I've always been a pretty good judge of character."
Colin watched him stand. When Margolis turned and started toward Maria, Colin cleared his throat.
"Can I get up now?"
Margolis looked over his shoulder for a couple of seconds, then shrugged.
"I don't know. Can you?"
Using his head to brace himself, Colin lifted his hips and shot his knees forward in a single motion, landing on his feet. Margolis waved off one of the officers who had taken a step toward Colin. He smirked again.
"With moves like that, I'm sure all the guys in prison will want to dance with you. But tell you what, why don't you wait right there while I figure out what's going on here?"
Margolis signaled to the two officers to approach, and Colin watched as they conferred in low tones. One of them thumbed toward Maria a couple of times. The other nodded in Colin's direction. By then, a number of the neighbors had come outside and were standing on their lawns or in the street, craning their necks for a better view. He wasn't the only one who'd noticed. Margolis did as well. And after a brief discussion with the family, everyone except Colin began to head inside. Surprising Colin, Margolis motioned for him to join them. In the living room, Maria again went through the story from the top, including a description of what Lester had been wearing, only this time in a more linear fashion. Her family stood behind her, looking more upset than she did, while the two officers who'd arrested Colin flanked the front door. Colin watched as Margolis took notes, Serena occasionally interjecting. It wasn't until Maria was finished that Margolis asked his first question.
"Did he ever directly threaten you with a gun?" Margolis asked.
"He was holding it in his hand."
"But he didn't raise it or point it at you."
"Why does that make a difference?" Maria demanded. "He showed up at the house with a gun. You need to arrest him." Margolis held up his hands.
"Don't get me wrong. I'm on your side. With his admission that he sent the roses to the office and had the drink delivered and now this, there's no doubt that you'd be able to get the 50C. I can't imagine that any judge would turn down the request, and I'll put a call in to find out if I can get it expedited. I was asking because I was trying to determine whether he additionally violated any gun laws."
"He's mentally ill. That makes it illegal for him to own a firearm in this state."
"Maybe.
Maria's eyes flashed. He was in a psychiatric hospital this morning. Or so you told me.
I have no reason to believe that he wasn't there, and trust me, I'll make absolutely sure the detective was correct about that. But when I was talking about mental illness, I meant legally. To this point, I haven't had access to his medical records, and in those instances when he was arrested, the cases were dismissed. I'm not sure his mental status has actually been adjudicated. There's also a difference between entering a hospital voluntarily and being committed involuntarily.
You're splitting hairs, Maria said, her frustration becoming evident. I told you how he was acting. He was talking to the phone, for God's sake. He's delusional and he threatened me with a gun.
Are you sure?
Did you listen to a single thing I said?
Margolis stood straighter, defensiveness on display.
To be clear, nothing you said indicated that he raised the gun or compelled you to do anything. And when you retreated to your house, he ran in the opposite direction.
For a second, Maria said nothing, but Colin noted a flash of uncertainty in her eyes.
What about the fact that he slashed my tires and stole my phone?
He told you he slashed your tires?
No, but...
Maria looked up at him.
Why are you doing this? Making excuses for him. It's like you're looking for any reason not to arrest him.
On the contrary, I'm trying to find something that will stick. There's no reason to arrest him if I can't hold him.
He had a gun. Doesn't that mean anything?
It would if he tried to conceal it or threatened you. But according to you, he didn't do either.
That's insane.
That's the law. Of course, if he doesn't have a permit for the weapon, that's something I can use. But that won't be enough to hold him for long, nor will the fact that he took your phone.
What about slashing my tires?
Did he admit to that? Margolis asked again.
No, but...
Margolis sighed. I know this is frustrating for you, but I really am trying to help you here. I'm looking for something that might give rise to an actual arrest on charges serious enough to keep him locked away.
Okay, then. I was mistaken earlier. I remember now that he did aim the gun at me, pointed it at me the whole time.
Margolis lifted an eyebrow.
You're changing your story.
I'm correcting it, she said.
All right, he nodded. But before we go that route, you should also realize that this entire situation may be more complex than you think.
What does that mean?
I'm not at liberty to say. It's still early in the investigation. For now, all you really need to know is that I'm exploring a lot of different angles.
Different angles, Colin thought. Maria shot him a questioning look, then turned back to Margolis just as a knock sounded at the door. One of the officers who'd been searching for Lester poked his head in. Margolis excused himself and stepped outside for a minute, then returned to Maria and the family. The other two officers joined him inside, remaining near the door.
The officers said they couldn't find him. They went through the neighborhood a couple of times, talked with a few people who were out, and no one had seen him.
Colin opened his mouth, then closed it again. Margolis noticed.
Something to say?
I was wondering if they checked the park, he said, and the house on the next block that backs up to this one.
Margolis stared at him.
Why?
Colin told them what he'd learned, as well as his suspicions about the vacant house and Lester's spying activities. He also mentioned where he suspected Lester had been parking his car. At Margolis's prodding, Colin admitted he'd been visiting the neighborhood late at night and early in the morning, and had spent time researching license plates. Maria's parents looked sick at the revelations. Meanwhile, Margolis's stony gaze never swerved from him.
You're just telling me this now, that you've been playing private investigator all this time.
Colin nodded toward the officers.
I told the cops when they were arresting me where Lester might have gone. They didn't want to listen.
It was quiet for a moment. One of the officers shifted his weight from one foot to the other.
But he wasn't running toward the park, Serena ventured softly. Or for the house.
Excuse me, Margolis said.
The park is a few streets over that way, Serena said, pointing in the direction of the kitchen.
and unless he wanted to take the long way around the block, he wasn't running toward the vacant house either. He ran the other way, in the opposite direction.
Margolis absorbed this before excusing himself to huddle with the officers, two of whom subsequently departed.
About half an hour too late, Colin thought.
Margolis returned to Maria.
Assuming Lester drove here, and since there are no cars registered in his name, they'll find out if any of the cars have been stolen, or if we can link them to Lester in any other way. Of course, Lester may have doubled back and taken the car, or he may have simply run off. But the important thing for now is that I'm confident that you're safe. Are you planning to return to your place?
She'll be staying with us, Felix announced. Serena too.
Margolis thumbed over his shoulder.
Your front door is broken. I have some 2x4s in the garage. I'll brace it, and then tomorrow I'll have it repaired.
Do you have an alarm?
Yes, he said. But we don't use it much.
Use it tonight, even though you'll have to bypass the front door, and brace the door and keep the shades drawn as a precaution.
What about police protection? Serena asked. Having someone at the house?
I won't be able to swing that, Margolis answered. Pick your reason. Budget cuts, not enough manpower, limits on overtime, or even that the 50C hasn't been filed. But I'll call the commander, and I'm pretty sure I can arrange for a patrol car to swing by every few hours.
What if Lester comes back?
I don't think that's likely.
Why would you say that?
Because he's afraid of the police, and for all he knows, there will be an officer here.
Unless he's crazy and doesn't care.
He ran off earlier, Margolis said, but realizing how cavalier it probably sounded, he went on. I know you're frightened and upset, Miss Sanchez. I get it. I'll make sure a couple of the officers cruise the neighborhood for an hour or so, and who knows, maybe they'll get lucky and pick him up. If they do, they'll bring him in, and I'll stick him in the interrogation room and see what I can do. And tomorrow, either way, you file for the 50C, and the next time he comes anywhere near you, he'll be arrested. And that arrest will stick.
Colin noted the conflicting emotions playing out across Maria's features. She glanced at the officers near the door before drawing a long breath.
May I talk to you alone?
Margolis debated before finally nodding. He motioned for the other officers to leave, and they quietly exited through the front door. At the same time, Serena and her parents wandered toward the kitchen, and once they were gone, Maria sighed.
What about Colin?
Margolis looked over at him.
What about him?
I was hoping you'd talk to the officer who arrested him. Maybe convince him to let Colin off with some speeding tickets or whatever, instead of arresting him.
Margolis' expression verged on disbelief. Why would I do that? From what they told me, he was doing 60 in a residential neighborhood. He nearly crashed head-on with someone a couple of blocks from here, and he refused to pull over.
He shook his head.
Then once he got here, he defied the officer's instructions to stand down and instead made a volatile situation that much worse.
I was in danger. You would have done the same thing if you thought someone you loved might be harmed.
He should have just let the police handle it. Meanwhile, with the way he was driving, he was endangering other people's lives.
Lester had a gun, for God's sake.
Yet another reason to let the police handle it.
It's not fair and you know it, Maria cried, her composure cracking. I mean, sending him to prison for speeding?
I did a lot more than that, Colin thought. The officers only saw me during the last 2 minutes of the drive.
He made his choices, Margolis said. Don't forget that the officers had to draw their weapons. You could have been hurt. Your family could have been hurt.
And once he knew I was safe, he deferred to them and submitted willingly. He didn't raise his voice, didn't resist at all. You really want to ruin the rest of his life because he was racing to my rescue?
It's not my call, Margolis shrugged.
No, but I have the sense they'll listen to you.
She put her hands on her hips, willing Margolis to meet her gaze.
I know that you don't trust Colin and that you believe he belongs in prison. And if he'd struggled with the officers or resisted arrest or done anything else stupid, I wouldn't be asking you to intervene. But those things didn't happen.
and you don't strike me as being unreasonable or needlessly vindictive. She hesitated. I'd like to think that my impressions of you are correct. Please.
For an impossibly long moment, Margolis stared back at her, unmoving. Then, without a word, he started for the door. 5 minutes later, Colin was standing near the couch, absently rubbing his wrists where the cuffs had cut into them.
Thanks for coming to my aid, he said.
You're welcome.
I still can't believe he listened to you.
I can. He knew it was the right thing to do. And the arresting officer wasn't upset. After he heard the whole story, I don't think his heart was in it either.
Colin gestured at the door.
I'm sorry about that. I'll be glad to pay for it.
My dad doesn't care. Honestly, he's too angry at the thought that Lester has been spying on the family to worry about a door.
How about I help close it up for the night?
When she nodded, he followed her to the garage, returning with the 2x4s and a hammer and nails. Maria helped hold the boards in place, and when they were finally secure, she stepped toward Colin. Wrapping her arms around him, she held him for a long time before finally pulling back.
What are you going to do now?
I'm going to call my boss, he said. Let her know where I am and find out whether I've been fired. And then I figure I'll keep watch outside for the rest of the night. I want to be here if Lester shows up.
She nodded.
What do you think Margolis meant when he said he was exploring different angles? Lester admitted to almost everything.
Colin shrugged.
I have no idea. Something about Cassie's boyfriend, Mark, maybe, since he's gone off the grid.
Colin filled Maria in on the little that he'd learned earlier. Behind them, Felix walked into the living room, accompanied by Carmen. Carmen handed a glass of ice water to Colin while Felix inspected the work Colin had done to brace the door.
I'm sorry about that, Colin said, slightly abashed. I told Maria I'd pay for it.
Felix nodded.
This is good work. Sturdy.
He took a step toward Colin, meeting his gaze, his expression softening.
I wanted to thank you for rushing here when you thought Maria was in trouble, and for calling the police.
You're welcome. Carmen slipped back to his side as Felix went on. Behind them, Colin could just make out Serena in the kitchen, clearly listening in.
When we first met, I believe I may have misjudged you, he said. Maria told me she felt safe with you. Now I can understand why.
At his words, Maria slipped her hand into Colin's.
I heard you tell Maria that you'll want to keep watch tonight, outside, in case Lester comes back.
Yes.
I have a problem with that.
Colin looked at him, saying nothing.
You should be inside the house, not outside, as our guest.
He felt Maria squeeze his hand, and despite everything, he couldn't help smiling.
Okay.
Colin paced the living room, alternately peeking through the curtains on the front window and then doing the same through the kitchen windows. No sign of Lester. Margolis had been good to his word. A patrol car passed by the house 4 times, twice while the rest of the family was still awake, and twice after everyone else had gone to bed. Maria had stayed awake the longest, sitting with Colin until a little after 1. Before turning in, Felix had told Colin that he'd be up at 4 to take over the watch and allow Colin to get some sleep. The time to himself felt like a blessing to Colin, allowing him to process everything that had happened that evening. He still had more questions than answers, since nothing made sense. If, for instance, Lester was delusional to the point that he believed that Maria was out to get him, then his fear should have kept him away from Maria instead of drawing him to her repeatedly. But hadn't Lester essentially admitted he'd been stalking Maria all along? And why had Margolis told Maria that he was exploring different angles? Other questions plagued him too. Why had Lester admitted to sending the flowers and the drink, but not to slashing the tires? Had Lester actually driven, and if so, where did he get the car? If he'd left his car at the park but ran in the opposite direction, where was he going and why couldn't the police find him? And again, how had Lester known that Maria would be at the house when Maria herself had forgotten about her mom's birthday? The more he learned, the more confused he felt.
You're making me nervous, Maria said. And I'm sure you've worn a groove into the floor.
Colin looked over and saw her in the hallway dressed in her pajamas.
Did I wake you?
No, I slept for a little while.
What time is it?
A little after 3,
Maria said. She walked to the couch and patted the cushion beside her. When Colin sat, she leaned her head on his shoulder while he slipped his arm around her.
You should probably try to get some sleep.
I only have another hour until your dad is up.
I don't think he's sleeping. He's probably tossing and turning like I did.
She kissed him on the cheek.
I'm glad you're here, but my parents are too. Right before they went to bed, they apologized to me for the way they treated you earlier.
There was no reason to apologize. They've been very gracious, especially about me kicking in their door.
She shrugged.
To be honest, it was pretty impressive. Doors generally keep people out, but this one didn't even slow you down. They feel better knowing that you're here.
He nodded. Moonlight spilled in through a crack in the drapes, washing the living room with a silvery glow.
I wanted to tell you that the way you dealt with Lester was amazing. Not everyone would have been able to stay calm in that situation.
I wasn't calm. I was terrified. Every time I closed my eyes tonight, I kept seeing his face, and it was just so weird. I kept getting the feeling that he was more afraid of me than I was of him, even though he was the one with the gun.
I don't understand it either.
I wish the police had found him. I hate knowing that he's still out there, following and watching, planning and hiding. What good will a restraining order do if they can't serve him? And what if he shows up again before they do? I thought about leaving town, but what if he follows me or tracks me somehow? I mean, even I didn't know I was going to be here tonight, so how did he know? And how did he know I'd be at the bar?
I've been wondering about those things, too.
And? What am I supposed to do? I just want to feel safe.
I have an idea. It might be a bit over the top, but...
What is it?
He told her. Chapter 26. Maria. Maria was sleeping on the couch when she felt Colin kiss her goodbye and whisper that he'd be back by 8 o'clock. She was dimly aware of him slipping out the garage door. Surprising herself, she was able to get a few more hours of sleep before the sounds of the household roused her. Over coffee, she shared Colin's plans with her family. They listened with surprise. Her parents would have preferred that she stay where they could keep an eye on her, but they understood Colin's reasoning and accepted her decision, asking only that she stay in touch. Colin showed up at her parents' house around 8 with a disposable cell phone and followed Maria back to her condo. There, she showered, changed into jeans and a white t-shirt and black pumps, and packed an overnight bag. By 9, they were at the courthouse, where Maria completed and filed the necessary paperwork for the 50C. Margolis had been good to his word again. The clerk said that they'd get it before the judge to sign before the court convened for the day. Using the disposable phone, Maria texted Margolis her number and asked that he keep her informed as to any progress regarding Lester Manning. To her surprise, Margolis called less than half an hour later and asked to meet with her at a coffee shop.
It's a couple of blocks from the courthouse and we'll be able to talk in private, he said cryptically.
She felt good about the fact that she'd filed the paperwork and decided to go with Colin's idea. For the first time since all this had started, she'd acted instead of reacted. While there was no guarantee that they'd be able to serve Lester with the court order, taking the initiative made her feel as though she had some semblance of control. At the coffee shop, she and Colin sat in a corner booth where they could watch for Margolis's arrival. When he finally walked through the door half an hour late, it took only a second for him to spot them. As he wove his way between tables, Maria noticed the way the fabric of his ill-fitting blazer tightened around his biceps. Like Colin, Margolis seemed to spend a lot of time in the gym. He paused near the register to order a cup of coffee and then slid into the booth across from Maria and Colin. When he glanced at Colin, she thought she detected a trace less of his usual animosity. Or then again, maybe she was just imagining it.
Any problems with the 50C this morning?
No, Maria said. And thank you for your help. It's clear they were expecting me.
He nodded.
Judge Carson will be in court today. I left word with his clerk, so there shouldn't be any holdup. If you don't hear from them, let me know.
Sure, she said.
The waiter came by, dropping off the cup of coffee.
Margolis waited until he left before speaking again.
How did you hold up last night? He asked Maria.
I didn't sleep well, if that's what you're asking, but at least Lester didn't come back.
He nodded.
I checked this morning and he wasn't spotted on any of the patrols either. But he'll turn up. A guy like that tends to stand out and make people nervous, which means the calls come in. I'm confident someone will let us know when he shows up.
If he's still in town, she said. For all we know, he could be back in Charlotte by now, or God knows where else.
If he is, he's not in the hospital. I checked this morning. No sign of him. You should also know that I had my friend drive past the Manning place this morning. No sign of him there, either in the garage apartment or the house.
She nodded.
On another note, he went on, I spoke with the sheriff's department, and they're okay with me serving Lester when we do find him. That's actually good news. It's not always that easy. But I'd hate for Lester to be located and then not get served because there are no sheriffs readily available and he disappears again before they can.
So that's the plan? Maria asked. To wait until he shows himself?
I'm not sure there's another option. I'm just trying to make the best out of a bad situation.
Is that why you wanted to meet with me this morning? To tell me you couldn't find him?
No, Margolis said. A couple of interesting bits of information turned up, and I wanted to get your take on them.
I thought you weren't at liberty to talk about the investigation.
You're right, he said, which means I'll have to limit some of what I tell you. Still, I wanted to talk to you because I need your help.
Why?
Because the more I look into this situation, the less it seems to add up. I'm hoping that you can help me put the pieces together.
Welcome to my world, Maria thought.
Margolis went on.
Regarding the situation last night, I told you I was looking into possible weapons violations. But like everything else in this case, what seemed obvious isn't. So let's start with this. Lester does not have a gun permit. Nor has he legally purchased a weapon, which I thought was great news for you. However, it turns out that Avery Manning, the father, does have a permit for a handgun purchased about a year ago.
And?
The problem is that Lester and Avery, father and son, live at the same address. It's not illegal to borrow someone's gun if the weapon's properly permitted, so I can't make a case on that unless Avery Manning didn't give permission. But there are even more complications.
Such as?
Avery Manning came to see me this morning. He let those words hang before continuing. That's why I was late getting here, by the way. I figured it was better to meet with him before I talked to you. The story took yet another twist.
What?
The gun may not have been real.
Excuse me?
Margolis picked up his spoon and stirred his coffee as he went on.
Let me start from the beginning, okay? We sit down and the first thing I think is that Dr. Manning looks like crap, which made sense as soon as he told me he'd just driven in from Tennessee. He was clearly upset. He must have mowed through an entire pack of gum while we were sitting there, chewing and spitting out one piece after another. Although he didn't attempt to control the conversation, which surprised me based on the way you described him. But anyway, I ask him what I can do for him, and he immediately says that Lester has left Plainview and that he was worried Lester might come to see you. He begged me to warn you and tell you that if he showed up, you should call the police. He went on to say that Lester was in an acute delusional phase and that he'd been struggling with this disorder for years, yada, 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 pretty much all the same things he told me before. But yesterday, he wasn't even sure if his son was in the hospital. Margolis took a sip of coffee. He said the hospital called him as soon as the staff realized that Lester was missing, as he's the emergency contact. Apparently, when Lester didn't show up for his appointment with the social worker, the staff spent a couple of hours searching the hospital before they realized he must have left the grounds. That's when they called Dr. Manning.
How is that even possible? It's a psychiatric hospital. Don't they watch their patients?
According to Dr. Manning, Lester's been there regularly enough to understand the routines, and he's familiar with the staff. The administrator also emphasized that there was no reason not to trust Lester. Lester had entered the hospital voluntarily, and he'd never run off before.
So free time comes along, and they're guessing that Lester just slipped away. After that, he either has use of someone's car, or someone picked him up, and he made his way to Wilmington. And he obviously had a gun stashed somewhere along the way. Margolis shrugged. What can I say? He's paranoid.
If he wanted to warn me, why didn't Dr. Manning call you as soon as he found out?
He did, Margolis said, his expression letting her know he was just as surprised as she was. He left me a voicemail last night, but unfortunately I didn't get around to listening to it till this morning, after I'd already met with him. Even then, I'm not sure how much good it would have done. The call came in after Lester had already been at your place.
Maria nodded.
Anyway, after we went over those things, I told Dr. Manning that Lester had not only shown up at your parents last night and confronted you, but that he had a gun. At that point, Dr. Manning became even more upset. Then, after he'd seemed to calm down, he insisted to me that Lester's gun couldn't have been real.
Of course he'd say that.
That's what I thought, too. I asked him how he could be so sure. He said that he owned only two guns, an old shotgun he's had since he was a kid that he said might not even work, and the handgun I told you about, which he keeps in a locked case in the trunk of his car. He added that there was no way he'd ever leave it at the house where Lester could get his hands on it.
I know what I saw.
I don't doubt that, but let me finish, Margolis said. Dr. Manning told me that while Lester didn't have a real gun, he owned a pellet gun. He said he bought it for Lester when he was a teenager, and he'd assumed that it was in one of the boxes in the attic with Lester's other things. It's possible, he said, that his son may have retrieved it at some point in the past. So my question to you is whether it's possible that Lester may have been holding a pellet gun. Maria tried to recall the gun, but couldn't conjure up the necessary detail.
I don't know, she admitted. It looked real to me.
That's not surprising. Same color, same size, it was dark out, and you were terrified. Who knows? But it might explain why Lester never raised it, because he thought you may have noticed that the muzzle was too small.
Maria thought about it before finally shaking her head. It still doesn't mean that Lester's gun wasn't real. He could have bought it at a gun show or bought it on the street. It's not impossible.
True enough, Margolis conceded. As of now, I'm not ruling anything out.
And how do you know that Dr. Manning was telling the truth about his gun in the first place?
Because he showed it to me after the interview when he was leaving, and yes, it was in a locked case in his trunk.
When Maria didn't respond, Margolis went on.
There's something else you should know.
What's that?
Margolis reached into the file and pulled out an admission from Plainview Psychiatric Hospital. He slid it across the table to Maria.
Lester Manning was in the hospital the night your tires were slashed. I received this fax from Plainview this morning. You can see the date he entered the hospital.
Even as Maria stared at the document in front of her, she didn't quite believe it. Are you sure this is real?
Yes. Dr. Manning made the request while I was there, and the fax arrived a few minutes later, directly from the hospital.
Couldn't Lester have sneaked out, like he did yesterday?
Not that night. According to their records, he was in his room all night. Staff checked on him every 30 minutes.
Maria said nothing.